Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. As some of you already know by now, my name is Lou Cocheris, and I am the administrative law judge who's been assigned to assist the commission in the presentation of today's hearing. Welcome to the Public Utility Commission's second en banc hearing on the Marcellus Shale jurisdictional issues at commission docket number I-2010-2163461. Our four commissioners are present with me today, and we'll be the only ones asking questions of the presenters. Please remember right now to pull your cell phones out of your pockets, turn them off, put them in vibrate, but we don't really want to hear them. We have a set agenda today. We have eight speakers. I'm pleased to say that our panel of four is already seated and ready to go. It is my understanding that the panel members have been requested to bring with them three copies of their remarks. I'll take those three copies. One of them will definitely go to the court reporter who is recording with us today, and the other two will be distributed internally. We ask you to observe the idea that you're limited to 10-minute presentations. To help you keep track of time, we have a couple aids here. First of all, there'll be my glorious light box over here. The green light will come on, and that will be the start of your time. The instructions tell me that it goes for 9.5 minutes, and then it'll switch to yellow, and then it'll switch to red, and by red, you should have already ended. I will try to keep a little closer track and give you maybe a 1 or 2 minute warning, just so that you are beginning to think about concluding. There is one other thing that's critically important. We do have one known Marcellus Shale case pending before the commission right now at commission docket number A-20102153371 involving the application of Laser Marcellus Gathering Company, LLC. You are reminded not to discuss this case in your remarks today or any other ongoing case in front of the commission. All that being said, Mr. Chairman, do you have any more remarks?
Thank you, Judge Cocheris. I do not, but I leave it open to my colleagues if they do. Commissioner Paulson.
Thank you, Chairman Cawley. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank our presenters for taking the time out of their busy schedules to be with us. And also be remiss in not recognizing our retired, soon to be retired Judge Cocheris. As I joke with him, this is his last official en banc hearing. He's been a veteran, and he's got probably many battle scars from these hearings. But on a serious note, I want to take this opportunity to start off that noting this afternoon that I think we all recognize as a regulatory body the impact that the Marcellus Shale has on our statewide economy. And the investment that's being made here is critically important to Pennsylvania's future. In fact, if we look at a national level, I think dating back to 2008, the U.S. consumed over 23.3 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. And in my view, this low-carbon energy source is the bridge to a lower carbon future, and I also think it's the future to key part to Pennsylvania's economic future. One of our presenters here this afternoon, Mr. Morgan O'Brien, is active with the Allegheny Conference, and I thank him for the leadership that's been shown by the Allegheny Conference, as well as the Marcellus Shale Coalition in reaching out to this commission and my colleagues and I on this important, as I like to call it, economic development opportunity for the state. And when we talk about the Marcellus Shale, we know about the job impact, but more importantly, the economics of the shale. You know, we're looking at about $18.5 billion in economic activity, looking to create over 211,000 jobs at a time in Pennsylvania's history here where we really, really need these kind of energy jobs in our state. And I think Pennsylvania is in a unique position, both in terms of our workforce, as well as the leadership from the governor and the legislature, to really make this shale play work for all interested parties. So I look forward to the presentations here today, and we appreciate the turnout here today. It's phenomenal. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I will yield to any one of my colleagues that might have additional comments to add.
Vice Chairman Christie.
Thank you. I certainly will echo all the comments Commissioner Paulson just made, but also add just a couple other quick comments. As I mentioned before in these hearings, this is such a huge economic development impact to the state, and there's so many different aspects to it that we're just trying to get our arms around the opportunity that we have. And we've long been referred to as the Saudi Arabia of coal, and it's very exciting to think that we also could be looked upon as the Saudi Arabia of gas production. In fact, it's my understanding at this point in time that we have enough wells that are already capped that if we had the infrastructure in place that we're very, very close to being able to completely meet the gas needs of Pennsylvania and in a few years be in a position to actually export gas out of Pennsylvania. And that's just a reality that I think 3 years ago nobody could have even begun to think that that was a possibility. But it represents a lot of challenges for us, and I'm glad we have the panelists here today to talk about some of these issues, because as I see it right now, we're basically just poking holes in the ground and either putting the gas on interstate pipelines and getting it out of the state, or simply capping the wells, waiting for the infrastructure to be developed that will allow us to fully utilize the resource within the state. And I think we're going to be coming to the point very, very quickly here that we need to look at alternative uses for this natural gas. Otherwise, we could get to the point where we're saturated with the resource. I've been a long advocate of trying to help the electricity-related industry by reducing the gas costs, because the gas costs are such an important element of the single market clearing price. And so electric generation represents a very, very interesting opportunity for us. We also have opportunities to look at, you know, how do we take this resource and use it for as a tool to attract industry to come to Pennsylvania. I think we need a comprehensive statewide policy here on how we're going to take all of these opportunities and mesh them into a program where we look at this gas and use it to really maximize the economic development potential. I think we have an enormous opportunity to train new workers. It's exciting that we have this opportunity, but it's also discouraging when we see so many people from Texas and Oklahoma really being imported and then just once the job is done, leaving the state. And I think those are good jobs that we ought to look at some training programs here for the state. And of course, there's other alternative uses for this gas. We could use it as a fuel source for commercial vehicles. And I hope that with some of the input we hear today that we can get some good ideas and as an agency here, help support a sound policy for the state on how we maximize this resource. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just be very brief because I think the issues that should be covered in these hearings that we're holding have been already addressed by the Vice Chairman and Commissioner Paulson. But I would like to personally thank all of the folks for coming in today and providing testimony. The purpose of these en banc hearings are to provide information to the Commission to assist us in being able to make reasoned and informed decisions. So what you're providing to us is a huge benefit to the Commonwealth. And again, I thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. I would also welcome those of you who have made the effort to be with us today. Our first en banc hearing proved inadequate. There were so many that wanted to testify, we couldn't do it in one day. So here's a second chance. The initial purpose of these hearings was to inquire whether we were doing our duty to see that any jurisdictional issues are being addressed. and they are at least three. Pipeline safety, particularly for gathering lines. The gathering lines is really what we're talking about. Any adverse effect on regulated water companies' supply. Implications for the least cost procurement policy of the commission that requires natural gas distribution companies to obtain gas at the best possible price, and how the Marcellus play will affect that policy. So I hope we have your written comments, which we thank you for, but at least in my mind, those are the paramount issues. And I once again assure everyone here that we're not trying to exceed our jurisdiction. We're simply trying to determine the boundaries of our jurisdiction. But if we hear issues, we hear problems that we don't have the legal authority to address, you can be sure that we're going to be asking the legislature for that authority. So with that, Judge Kachiris, let's proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our first speaker today on behalf of the American Gas Association is John C. Mollenkopf. Sir?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, and commissioners. And thank you for the opportunity to appear here today. My name is John Mollenkopf, and I am Senior Vice President and Chief Operations Officer for MarkWest Energy Partners, LP. I've worked in the oil and gas industry for over 27 years, with particular emphasis on designing, constructing, and operating natural gas gathering systems, processing plants, treating plants across the United States. At the request of the American Gas Association and the Commission, I would like to share with you MarkWest's experience with regulatory requirements for gathering pipelines in other states, as well as our recommendations for appropriate regulation in Pennsylvania by the PUC. But first, I would like to tell you a little more about MarkWest. MarkWest Energy Partners is a publicly traded master limited partnership, or MLP, that owns and operates midstream natural gas pipelines and processing facilities in nine states, and has extensive experience in designing, constructing, and operating gathering systems, which serves several of the major shale plays across the country. In all, MarkWest owns and operates 14 gathering systems with over 2,000 miles of pipe, three Texas intrastate gas pipelines, two interstate gas pipelines, over 400,000 horsepower of gas compression, 13 gas processing plants, three gas treating plants, two natural gas liquid fractionation facilities, and one refinery off-gas processing plant, which in all serve over 2 BCF a day, a billion cubic feet per day of natural gas. MarkWest does not drill or produce wells and is focused solely on providing midstream services to its producer customers. MarkWest is committed to safety and environmental excellence in all that it does and complies fully with all regulations and laws applicable to its operations. In southwestern Pennsylvania, MarkWest operates an extensive natural gas gathering system serving the Marcellus Shale, as well as processing and fractionation plants that support those operations. Since mid-2008, MarkWest has invested over $450 million developing the Marcellus system, with significant and continuing investment planned for the foreseeable future. We currently employ 57 employees in Pennsylvania, with plans to staff up to 87 by year end. I've been asked to provide some examples and perspective of regulatory framework and operations from other states in which MarkWest operates. Accordingly, I will discuss two of our largest gathering systems, which serve the Woodford and Haynesville shales located in Oklahoma and Texas, respectively. These two systems are very similar to our system being developed in the Marcellus Shale. They're both relatively new in that they have been constructed over the past several years, and their associated regulatory requirements are relevant to our discussions here today. The first of the systems is the Woodford Shale Gathering System located in southeast Oklahoma, which began construction in late 2006 and now consists of over 500 miles of gathering pipelines, two gas processing plants for natural gas liquids removal, and three gas treating plants for CO2 removal. The Woodford system now moves over 500 million cubic feet per day of raw gas. In this system, the raw gas is collected at the wellhead into low-pressure gathering pipeline system, operating at approximately 50 pounds per square inch. The gas stream is then compressed to a pressure of about 1,000 pounds per square inch by one of many compressor stations distributed along the system. From the compressor stations, the raw gas flows through high-pressure gathering pipelines to either the processing plants or the treating plants. The plants remove impurities and/or natural gas liquids from the raw gas, conditioning the gas to meet all transmission and especially interstate pipeline specifications. At the outlet or tailgate of the plants, the gas is delivered into interstate transmission pipelines. In Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Corporation Commission, or the OCC, oversees the safety compliance for gathering pipelines consistent with the federal U.S. Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration's, or PHMSA, regulations contained in 49 CFR 192. A new statute was recently adopted by the legislature that also gives the OCC the authority to collect information relating to incidents that occur on gathering lines located in Class 1 locations. Gathering companies are not public utilities in Oklahoma. The regulatory structure in Oklahoma strikes a good balance for maintaining safety oversight without impeding the economic and efficient development of gathering systems. A great example is our system, which was built from scratch, growing the Woodford Shale from 0 to 500 million cubic feet per day in just over three years. The system is highly efficient and was constructed with great care to protect the environment and the safety of our employees and the general public, all in accordance with the requirements of the OCC. The second system is our East Texas gathering system, which collects gas from the Haynesville Shale, as well as from the Cotton Valley Tight Sand Formation near Carthage, Texas. This system is constructed similar to the Woodford system described above and consists of over 200 miles of both low and high pressure gathering pipelines, 16 compressor stations, and two natural gas processing plants with a capacity of over 500 million cubic feet per day. As with the Woodford system, the raw gas is collected at low pressure, compressed, and then processed for removal of natural gas liquids. Once the gas meets all interstate specifications, it is delivered to several interstate pipelines for sale into the marketplace. In Texas, gathering pipelines are regulated by the Texas Railroad Commission for safety under Federal Regulation 49 CFR 192, as delegated by PHMSA. Texas has amended the federal definition of natural gas gathering pipelines slightly to match the Commission's historical interpretation of the definition. Gathering pipelines are exempted from utility regulation if they meet certain criteria. Specifically, they must be gathering from the same field, and they may not use eminent domain when acquiring rights of way. While only approximately 10% of gatherers are considered to be utilities, the majority of those have elected to be considered a utility due to the difficulty in obtaining right of way easements at fair market value. This is particularly true in the more populated areas of the Barnett Shale. While this utility status allows the gatherer to use eminent domain, it is a status which does not bring with it rate setting, convenience of service determinations, or other utility-type financial regulations which are required for interstate pipelines or pipelines serving the public. This practice has removed a large obstacle from the economic development of the Barnett Shale without imposing stifling utility regulation of gathering pipelines, which would have the opposite effect. Once again, the East Texas gathering system is a state-of-the-art system which was efficiently and economically constructed to meet all safety and environmental requirements of the Texas Railroad Commission. At MarkWest, our top commitment and priority is safety. We operate our pipeline facilities to meet and in many cases exceed the requirements of the federal regulations contained in 49 CFR 192. This includes our facilities in Class 1 locations. In Class 1 locations, we follow the same regulatory requirements as outlined in 49 CFR 192.9. We also x-ray 100% of our welds to ensure the integrity of the pipeline when it is installed. This is a substantial commitment to ensure the safe operations of our systems. This is the case for all of our operations here and throughout the country. The pipeline industry has taken many proactive steps to address pipeline safety over the course of the last decade. Operators have implemented new personnel training and qualification programs, as well as integrity management programs in which operators have focused on addressing the risks to pipelines and the communities in which we operate. Operators have also significantly increased their damage prevention programs and implemented awareness education for those most likely to be impacted by a pipeline. The industry also worked with regulators to successfully define what a natural gas gathering line is, and specifically when it begins and ends, and to appropriately regulate it based on risk. We fully support the PUC being granted clear authority to monitor and enforce the requirements of 49 CFR 192. We also support all pipelines, regardless of type of pipeline or existing regulatory oversight, being members of State One Call System. It is important to note that even if all pipelines are members of the One Call System, there must be an effective enforcement agency.
One minute, sir.
Okay. Without that enforcement, there is no incentive to comply with the requirements of the law. We are aware of the Commission's inquiry into how gathering lines such as ours fit into the PUC's existing regulatory framework and the definition of public utilities. Historically, gathering line operators have not been considered public utilities under Pennsylvania or other state laws, including Texas and Oklahoma, because gatherers do not provide consumer quality gas to the public. Simply put, gathering line operators do not fit into the definition of a public utility as is currently written in Pennsylvania, and therefore should not be rate regulated. Public utilities were created to ensure the public at large receives service for basic necessities like water and electricity. Unlike those service providers identified in state law, gathering lines do not provide or sell gas to the public at large. We also understand this is also the stated position of the Commission. To sum up my testimony, MarkWest supports the PUC becoming a state agent for the purpose of inspecting and enforcing the current safety regulatory requirements found in 49 CFR 192 for natural gas gathering pipelines and having the authority and appropriate funding to operate in this capacity. However, as an independent issue, gathering pipeline operators should not be included as public utilities. Instead, the Commission should preserve open markets, the ability of private operators to support the industry, and encourage the development of the Marcellus. The Marcellus provides an exciting opportunity for the Commonwealth and the nation to develop clean-burning natural gas that will help fuel the nation's economy going forward. I hope the examples and recommendations we have covered provide additional insight and information to help the Commission in its decision-making process on gathering pipeline regulation. We look forward to working with you as discussions on these and related issues move forward, and I'm available to answer questions now or in the future at your convenience. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, do you wish to initiate questions now or wait till the panel is complete?
Let's hear from all the panelists first, and then we'll ask questions.
Thank you. The next speaker we have is Mr. Fritz from EQT Midstream.
Thank you. Just a minute while they bring up. I have some slides. Good afternoon, Chairman Cawley, distinguished commissioners, and the staff of the Public Utility Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to appear here today. My name is Martin Fritz. I'm president of EQT Midstream. EQT Midstream is a business unit of EQT Corporation, one of the largest exploration and production companies in the Appalachian Basin. We are based in Pennsylvania and have been headquartered in Pittsburgh for over 120 years. As shown on this slide, EQT focuses solely on the Appalachian Basin, primarily on the Marcellus and Uran-Barea shale plays. We have approximately 3.4 million acres of land shown in yellow, much of it owned outright in fee, and over 11,000 miles of pipeline in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Virginia. EQT consists of three business units. I won't belabor them here. You can see the statistics. EQT Midstream provides its services not only to EQT production and gathering, but also other third-party companies. EQT Midstream gathers natural gas from more than 17,500 wells and delivers it to 14 local distribution companies in Pennsylvania and other Appalachian states. We also deliver gas to the long-lying transmission pipes running from the Gulf Coast and Midwestern states to New England, which also brings gas to the Commonwealth to meet its approximately 810 billion cubic feet of annual gas demand. EQT Midstream currently has 918 miles of pipeline in Pennsylvania and expects that amount to continue to expand. We have constructed approximately 1,000 miles of new gathering pipe in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Virginia in the last few years to support our Huron, Berea, and Marcellus plays, and believe that to be one of the largest amounts constructed in Appalachia to date. The map on this slide shows the location of EQT Midstream's gathering lines in reddish brown and the location of EQT Midstream's transmission lines in orange. The inlet map shows a rough approximation of the location of some of the Marcellus drilling activity occurring around our pipeline system. EQT constructs and operates its pipelines in accordance with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Pipeline Safety Regulations at 49 CFR Part 192, many times referred to, as you know, as just Part 192. As we will discuss, we would support legislation aimed at safety and limited to allowing the PUC to become a state agent for the purpose of inspecting and enforcing Part 192 for gathering lines in Pennsylvania. We would oppose any legislation defining a gathering line as a utility for the purpose of regulating rates, contract terms, location, sizing, or other matters, since gathering pipe is not a monopoly distribution service like a utility, but rather a competitive enterprise where terms, pricing, and other factors are determined through arm's-length negotiations between producers and many gathering companies. Each day, more gathering companies come into Pennsylvania. This slide and the next slide are the wonderful news for the Commonwealth and the country. Horizontal drilling and other technology advances have recently allowed us to make available now natural gas supplies in shale rock formations that were previously thought to be either unrecoverable or uneconomic to produce. For Marcellus shale alone, there is expected to be between 250 and 500 trillion cubic feet of recoverable gas. To put that in perspective, at the high end, that's roughly enough natural gas to supply Pennsylvania consumers at current usage rates for 600 years and the entire nation for over 20 years. In 2009, there were 710 Marcellus wells drilled in Pennsylvania, including 46 Marcellus wells drilled by EQT production. That number, as shown by the numbers of permits, is expected to continue to climb. Natural gas currently supplies approximately 22% of the U.S. energy needs, and a recent survey shows that an overwhelming majority of business and environmentalists support its increasing its use, given it's a clean, abundant, and American energy source. For example, natural gas has approximately half the CO2 emissions of coal and a quarter of diesel fuel. This map shows all the shale plays and highlights that natural gas is abundant and available domestically, and that the U.S. Energy Information Administration estimates that we have at least 120 years of domestic natural gas supply. That 120 years of supply should probably increase as technology improves. For example, there has been a 36% increase in projected reserves from 2006 to 2008. Given natural gas is an abundant domestic resource, its development helps national security and provides us, among other things, further opportunities for cleaner power generation and converting vehicle fleets to run on natural gas. I won't belabor this slide too much more. This is the Penn State study, since the vice chair referred to the great economic opportunity. In the case of EQT, to put some facts to it, we have increased jobs by more than 40% over the last 5 years to support the Huron, Berea, and Marcellus plays, and look to add upward to an additional 130 new jobs in 2010. These jobs are not just construction and operation and drilling jobs that were referred to, but also professional positions such as engineers, accountants, and attorneys. In addition to the direct economic impact of the natural gas industry, there is also the potential to attract new industries to Pennsylvania. Historically, our steel manufacturing and other industries developed in Pennsylvania as a result of our natural resources of natural gas, coal, and oil that were discovered in the Commonwealth. Marcellus now offers us the opportunity to have a resurgence, with the potential of attracting new industries to the state with abundant and reasonably priced energy. We certainly want to ensure we do not thwart or significantly slow that economic development with any unneeded regulation. Obviously, at EQT, and I won't belabor this slide, safety is our number one driver. I would point out, though, that Third-party excavation damage is the top gathering line safety risk and number one cause of serious pipeline safety incidents. Therefore, EQT Midstream voluntarily participates in the PA One Call system, and we have had no significant pipeline incidents in Pennsylvania. To help ensure safety, we follow 192, similar to Mark West, on all the pipes we do. And I would point out that history shows that the existing regulation of gathering lines under Part 192 has been effective to date in Pennsylvania. As you can see on this slide from PHMSA, there have been zero significant gathering line incidents in the last 20 years in Pennsylvania, which is the extent to which records are available. Nationally, improper excavation is the top cause of incidents, and the recent incident out west you may have read about appears to have been caused by a third-party excavator using improper digging techniques and hitting a marked and known pipeline. In that incident, it appears the excavator was using an auger on top of a high-pressure line rather than hand digging. While there have been no gathering line incidents, in the case of regulated Pennsylvania distribution lines, there have been 65 significant incidents in the last year, or last 10 years, the largest portion of which, just like nationally, were caused by excavation damage. Thus, rather than further regulation of gathering line utilities, we believe the primary focus should be on more education and enforcement action requiring excavators to use PA One Call and proper excavation techniques. Additionally, we believe it would be helpful to make participation mandatory and narrow the exclusions from PA One Call such that extractive industries, where our experience in other states has found to be the cause of most frequent gathering line strikes, such as lumber companies, coal companies, who are not subject to One Call, building access road, and dozers hitting lines. That has been our finding of the most significant risk. EQT believes ensuring safe operations while also not restricting economic development. We believe that any expansion of regulation of gathering lines should only be for the regulation of safety and limited to enforcement of the current U.S. Department of Transportation regulations. We are fine with legislation permitting the PUC to become a state agent for purpose of inspecting and enforcing Part 192 for gathering lines, assuming that it leads to more safe and thorough inspections and investigations than PHMSA currently may have the staffing to provide. We do not believe legislation beyond this makes sense, as the safety record shows there have been no significant gathering line incidents in the last 20 years in Pennsylvania and very few in other states, and for safe regulation to truly be effective, you need standardization. Being a state agent would put us in line with our fellow Marcellus state of West Virginia, which currently operates in a similar manner. Regulations beyond becoming a state agent risk significantly slowing the economic development and putting Pennsylvania and its consumers potentially at a disadvantage. Additionally, regulation of rates, contract terms, pipeline location, sizing, and other matters are not needed since gathering pipe is not a monopoly distribution service like a utility, but rather a competitive enterprise where these items are determined through arm's length negotiations between many gathering companies and producers and or landowners. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Mr. D'Amico, representing the Pennsylvania Independent Oil and Gas Association.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, and Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I apologize for my last-minute cancellation at the first en banc hearing. I did have a death in the family. You have had my written comments here for quite some time. I'm going to go through them very briefly, quite frankly. I am very impressed with the comments that my two predecessors here have made, and frankly, I could have probably just faxed in a Me Too comment on it because I think they did an excellent job and certainly agree with their positions. The Pennsylvania Independent Oil and Gas Association, PIOGA, is pleased to participate today. We're a newly formed entity created from the merger of my original organization, IOGA Pennsylvania, and POGAM, Pennsylvania Oil and Gas Association. IOGA has been an active participant in the PUC on a number of producer issues, and we will continue as PIOGA in that role. Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is providing the Commonwealth with a unique opportunity to move toward independence from natural gas supplies outside the state's borders. The fall 2008 study from Penn State predicts that by 2014, we will be capable of meeting all the needs of our citizens versus the traditional 25 to 26% of supply from conventional gas developments had here in Pennsylvania. We're pleased to see that, among other things that the Commission has talked about, is how to best promote this resource in the Commonwealth. By minimizing the need for long-line firm contracts with the Southwest, we believe the Pennsylvania natural gas supply will clearly be and continue to be the low-cost supply to our residential, commercial, and industrial customers. We are, however, concerned that the focus on the Marcellus Shale becomes an opportunity or excuse for creating an unnecessarily increased regulatory burden on the producing industry in Pennsylvania. As IOGA, we have experienced issues in the past where we believe that the Commission has attempted to exceed its statutory authority on our industry. We do not wish to see that happen again. We would point out to the lawsuit by IOGA against the Commission over assessments on natural gas suppliers, which in our opinion, as well as Commonwealth courts, was in clear conflict with the Natural Gas Competition Act. And I apologize for picking on the four current commissioners, since none of them were part of that decision. Our industry is very focused on pipeline safety, as well as other safety. We believe the federal law on pipeline safety is adequate to protect the public. In reality, the legal liability of pipeline accidents and the public relations nightmare of having pipeline accidents is far more effective on our companies to do a safe job of constructing and maintaining than anything any regulatory agency can accomplish. Historically, the producing industry's record of safety has, if anything, exceeded the safety record of regulated pipelines. Much of this is a result of the rural nature of many of our operations, as well as the decline in pressure over the life of a producing well. We believe this is the primary reason production lines are excluded in federal pipeline regulation. PIOGA is neutral over whether DOT or Pennsylvania PUC handles the inspection of pipelines under DOT regulation. That is assuming that the PUC would regulate those lines for safety under the same standards the federal program currently regulates and does not seek to expand beyond those regulatory authorities. We understand the need to fund inspections, and as long as we see a reasonable cost structure, we would be willing to accept a fee on pipelines to cover this funding. However, we strongly believe this should be based on size and mileage of pipelines, not pipeline revenues. PIOGA believes that the Commission's duty and authority to regulate these lines may be limited to pipeline safety only. We are opposed to the Commission setting rates, establishing exclusive service territories, or any other utility-style regulation. Contrary to the opinion of the Commission and some in the legal profession, we believe the transport of producers' gas via gathering systems to a regulated pipeline is not serving the public. The Public Utility Code should be used for its original intent, regulate the rates of monopoly distribution service to the consumer. Transportation of third-party gatherers or producer-owned gathering lines should not be considered as providing a service to the public when we, the producers, are the group being served. Rates for gathering, rates for gathering lines, location of lines, sizing and planning these lines should be through negotiation between the producer and the gatherer, with no involvement of any jurisdictional agency. To do anything else would delay, discourage, and prolong the time it will take to provide the full benefit of local gas supply to the consumer. During the 80s, the Commission required each utility to have a lower transportation rate for local gas than for interstate supplies. We would like to see that position resume if the Commission wishes to promote the local supply of natural gas. As an organization whose members producing conventional gas greatly outnumber our Marcellus producers, we too are concerned about crippling conventional production. We're against any regulatory or taxation scheme that disadvantages our producers. We are, however, concerned with the tendency of the General Assembly and the various regulatory bureaucracies in the state to obsess about regulating the Marcellus producers and single those producers out for excessive regulation of any kind. Our conventional producers will have to compete with this new supply as we have already been competing with interstate supply. We intend to compete on a level playing field, not one that either advantages or disadvantages the Marcellus producers. We thank the Commission for the opportunity to speak today and are open to this time questions. And I did want to add one more item at the end of this, given the comments of Commissioner Paulson and Vice Chairman Christie. Very excited to hear the Commission recognize the extent of this opportunity to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. As a lifelong resident here and a member of our producing industry since, let's say quite a long time, it's very encouraging to me for the opportunity to bring jobs here in the state at a time when over the years I have witnessed more jobs vacating the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania than ever came here. So it's exciting for me to be part of an industry that's bringing this kind of opportunity here. Vice Chairman Christie, I'll want to comment to you. I agree 100% about the ability to create jobs for Pennsylvanians, not necessarily for folks out of state. I mean, that's a very huge focus of my organization, as well as the training, as we're working throughout the state with educational groups, a workforce investment board, and with labor and industry to help the train people to serve these positions. We will see a lot of people from the traditional oil and gas producing states coming here for, you know, in the interim times, for no other reason than to train our indigenous workforce to meet these needs. It's quite costly for these folks to bring people in from other parts of the country to stay here. They're no more desirous of staying here in Pennsylvania than we are of not having those jobs filled by Pennsylvanians. I like to joke that after you're from Midland, Texas, and you make the first winter in northeastern and north central Pennsylvania, you're really happy to go back to Midland. So, again, I would like to thank the Commission, and I'm open to any questions.
Our next speaker is Mr. Morgan O'Brien on behalf of the People's Natural Gas Company, LLC.
I thought I would just talk to you about what my comments are and what they aren't. Maybe just to give you some perspective, and I think hopefully some of this rings true with Chairman Cawley. I know a lot of you weren't on the commission at the time, but I took over as president and CEO at Duquesne Light Company. And the company had a lot of issues. And one of the biggest challenges I had was the system, the infrastructure system needed upgraded. And so I had to convince my board to allow me to spend over $500 million on upgrading our infrastructure. And this is a company whose history was we built nuclear power plants as the steel industry was leaving Pittsburgh. And the first question I had was, how do we know we're going to make this investment and that Pittsburgh's going to be able to support the investment that you're making? And the commitment I made to that board was that I was going to be engaged in what was going on in the region on economic development, and that that was an important part of our business going forward. We had a regulated monopoly, but being engaged in what's going on in the community and in the region is critical to the business. And then I remember I got a call one day from the chairman's office that the governor's office was looking at a large expansion of a steel mill in western Pennsylvania. It was Allegheny Technology. And there was an opportunity potentially for somebody to help that project move forward. And it was within our service territory. It was at a time when rate caps had come off at Duquesne and industrial customers were very confused. And the company actually had offers from the state of Kentucky to come there and get lower electric prices. And so I got engaged really for the first time in trying to understand what industrial companies deal with when rate caps came off. And we walked through and came up with a solution. And as we were doing that, working with the governor's office and the county executive's office in Allegheny, we also were told of a potential opportunity at another large industrial in western Pennsylvania. U.S. Steel was looking to make a $1 billion potential investment in their facility in our service territory, which is two huge projects for our region. And working with those groups, I think you'll recall, we crafted a piece of legislation, House Bill 1530, which actually got enacted, which allowed utilities for dealing with large industrial customers to basically walk outside the deregulation rules and allow them to have a facility or have contracts to serve those facilities in the name of economic development. I mean, that was the principle behind it, and it had a lot of support from the governor's office and people in legislature. And then obviously the economy crashed, and there were a lot of issues, and that never moved forward, and I moved over to the gas company. So I'm sitting here today. I don't understand all the important issues that you're dealing with. Things I do know today are that Peoples Gas 10 years ago bought about 30% of its gas locally and 70% off the interstate. Today we buy 70% of our gas pre-Marcellus Shale from the Ioga producers and other producers. So Pennsylvania has been drilling gas and understands how to drill gas and does it in a proper way without any issues. And the other thing I've learned is that the safest form of transportation of any type, barge, rail, is moving gas through an interstate transmission line that Martin and his firm does. So we know how to drill gas, and it's safe. Those are the two things I've learned shortly in my time. Getting back to the testimony, as Commissioner Paulson said, I'm part of the Allegheny Conference, engaged in what's going on in western Pennsylvania, and everybody's looking at Marcellus Shale saying, how do we create opportunities beyond just the drilling jobs and the rigging jobs and all the jobs associated with this? And the discussion around, you know, let's convert our school buses to natural gas. Let's convert state vehicles to natural gas. Let's take an advantage of having all this gas production. And I sit there with whatever I've learned, which may not be much, and you can be the judge, saying this is a huge opportunity for us to look at this and say we could help economic development in this state. We just took, the state already owns the natural resources. The state is out selling its forests and wherever else it has to drill. And what if the state kept some of that natural gas and utilized it for economic development and just literally was able to, rather than take a royalty and help fund the state's operating budget, but utilize the asset that it owns for economic development? Then I sit here and understanding what industrial customers are dealing with, and we can all argue over what's working and what isn't working, but yesterday I was here with the chairman and CEO of U.S. Steel, and the CEO of Allegheny Technology is closely associated with the Allegheny Conference, and those guys still have those opportunities sitting there looking at huge investments that they could be making in western Pennsylvania. And I say to myself, what if you stuck a power plant on top of those wells, and what would that do? And so in my testimony, you'll see I just ran some scenarios and said, what if you earned 10% on that gas well, or what if you earned 15% on that gas well? How does that convert into the price of electricity? And what you see is it's a pretty compelling price of electricity. Yesterday, a group of CEOs from Pittsburgh, the Allegheny Conference, that represents 300 companies in western Pennsylvania. We met with the governor. We met with each caucus yesterday to discuss economic development in western Pennsylvania. And we also met with the commissioners. And the number one, obviously, economic development project that everybody in western Pennsylvania is excited about is Marcellus Shale. And every group we met with, we're talking about specific issues, this issue, that issue. And until we sat and talked to this group, and the CEOs, we left yesterday, and they all said, the only group who really has their arm around this is the PUC. It's, you guys live and understand these issues, you deal with it. And what you'll see in my testimony is this opportunity is one that I think is incredibly powerful. It could really be an incredible tool for the state to take advantage not only of just monetizing the asset it has, but using it for true economic development. I'm not talking about converting buses and trucks, which will take a long time and will have some payback, but it'll be a long payback. But sticking power plants, converted into electricity. One of the questions we got yesterday from, this is caucus leadership, was when are we going to see these old coal plants go away? And you know, my answer to them was build some gas power plants with Marcellus Shale, and those coal plants are going to go away quickly. My analysis will say the economics of putting a power plant around the Marcellus and with this additional opportunity can produce electricity at a lower price than any of those coal plants, and it's much cleaner, as all of you know. And I guess just finally, you know, we all sit here and say, well, you know, it's probably not falls under the jurisdiction of the PUC. I've seen in my years, which probably isn't as long as everyone's here, but that the PUC has helped educate and weigh in on important legislative issues. And I would say that if this commission decided that this was worth exploring or continuing to think about, whether it's in the forum I presented or whatever forum it is, that this is an economic development opportunity for this state, I think my ask of you is to give that serious consideration, because my honest view is it's such a technical area, it's complicated, there's so many different, nobody in the legislature really has the time and effort to put their arms around this. This could be a huge economic development. It already is with just the drilling and all the opportunities that everyone's talking about. It could be that times some multiple if we actually expanded it and looked at a total energy package. And I'm not talking about deregulation. I'm talking about using it purely for economic development. And I'm not talking about absconding assets from producers. I'm talking the state owns assets. Let's utilize them in a different way. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. And with your help and Mr. D'Amico's, we're back on schedule. Mr. Chairman, do you have questions?
Let's start with the Vice Chairman.
Thank you. I'll just have questions for each one of the panelists, but I'll start with Morgan and just say that I couldn't agree more than what you laid out in your testimony. And I think we all in Western Pennsylvania realize that some of our largest employers have been under attack of leaving the state, as in the case of Allegheny Technologies looking to move to Kentucky with attractive power deals. And as I tell everyone, whether you like deregulation or you think it's a disaster, the reality is there's other states in the South that have the ability to lure our industry away. And there's nothing worse for a community than to lose one of their largest employers. And so I share your sentiment that we need to look at the bigger picture here and how we use this resource to try to use it as an economic development tool to help keep industry in Pennsylvania as well as to attract industry to come to Pennsylvania. I think we've got that unique opportunity here. So I really don't have any other questions on your testimony other than I agree with much of it. John, I had a question for you regarding some of the processing plants. It's my understanding that we have enormous amounts of ethane that is being extracted from the liquids-rich gas plays. And I was just curious as to your feelings about how much opportunity we have to use that ethane for more local purposes, such as maybe building a power plant that would utilize the resource more on a local basis instead of trucking it away to other states.
Yes, the ethane currently is not being extracted. It's being blended with the methane that goes into the interstate pipelines. So essentially, that ethane is going. It's being used as fuel in power plants off the interstate pipelines currently as a gas. I think the interstate pipelines have specifications on thermal contact or BTU that you'll hear. That they typically want the BTU value to be less than 1100, and currently without extracting the ethane, you're running more in the 1135 type range. So it's just a little bit over the specs. But as the resource develops, that's going to become more and more a part of the gas stream that's feeding the Northeast. And so that's why you hear a lot of the talk about extracting ethane as a liquid so that it can come out of the interstate pipelines so that they can maintain their specs. And their specs have to do with burner designs in homes, et cetera, that can't handle the higher BTU gas. Now, power plants can be designed to burn the higher BTU ethane, but it's unusual. But they are getting the benefit of it now. And if there's too much ethane, there'll be a solution to move that liquid ethane to a petrochemical market.
One other question. You mentioned that, I can't remember the state, that they oversaw the safety of the gathering systems, but not the rates, and they also specifically mentioned no eminent domain for the gathering systems. Is that typical of what you see across the country as far as regulation over these gathering lines, that the eminent domain is kept to the side?
Yes, it is. It is typical. Texas is unique in that it, if you use eminent domain and you can just decide to do that, you immediately become a utility. So most gatherers try very hard not to use eminent domain, although the utility regulation that you get in Texas is very light-handed. There's no rate setting. There's some additional filing requirements and of reports, and there's a little bit more inspection on utility pipelines. The utility status gives you the ability to use eminent domain. That's very uncommon. We typically, Mark West in particular, we try not to use eminent domain anytime we can. We want to be good neighbors. We want to negotiate in good faith with the community, and we can usually work out a deal that everybody's happy with. And so we try very, very hard to do that. There's been cases in Texas where that's been very difficult, and so some of the gatherers have sought the authority of eminent domain to promote the construction of gathering systems, but it's very uncommon.
I think we have an issue here. A lot of people have testified that we should oversee the safety, but not the rates, but the issue of eminent domain has been very silent, I think, up until this point in that whole debate. Martin, just a couple quick questions for you. I noticed on your chart, the Marcellus Shale, this is the first time I've seen where it's expanded over as far into Ohio and as far up in New York and even over into Kentucky now. Is that a recent phenomena and has there been much drilling activity?
That chart's a little hard to read. It is in northern West Virginia. It does extend into New York and a little bit into Ohio. The southern part in Kentucky is more the Huron-Berea Shale, which is another shale that is a little shallower than the Marcellus Shale. So that chart was put out, I think, by the Energy Information Administration is where I pulled that chart from. So that's their picture. It's more probably, you know, ballpark than an exact precision with lines. Yeah. One extra thing I'd follow up to John. We agree with John sort of on the landowners. We would rather negotiate at the end of the day. And I would point out on the ethane issue, currently we're not sure how much is what we call rich gas, non-pipeline quality, but the estimates are only between 15% and 25%. It's basically sort of the Washington, Greene County area and west, and up in the central and northeast, it seems to be more gas, pipeline quality gas. So there may, the industry is still struggling. Do we really have an ethane issue or don't we have an ethane issue? You can always use it if there's a market, people will extract it if, to Morgan's point, if there's, you know, if you set up a power plant, I would at the end of the day from an EQT perspective would rather ship it and burn it locally than have to build the pipe. That makes good economic sense. I have to spend several million dollars a mile to build the pipe. If I can burn it locally, it makes all the more sense in the world.
And just one final question for Lou. I saw in your testimony on the second page, you state that during the 1980s, the commission had required each utility to have a lower transportation rate for local gas than for interstate supplies, and that you'd like to see that position reestablished. Do you know why we got rid of that policy or that position?
Commissioner, I have no idea. I think it just evolved more than anything else. I think that in an effort to make sure there were adequate supplies of gas, there was concern that there was not going to be enough local supply to meet the needs. I think we've already proven even before the Marcellus that was not the case, but with the Marcellus, certainly not the case. So, yeah, that is something we would certainly like to see happen again.
Thank you.
Commissioner Paulson.
Thank you, Chairman Cawley. I'm really encouraged by what's been stated here today. I think going back to our first en banc hearing, and the chairman and many of us through the legislative hearing process have reiterated this, that the Public Utility Commission is not looking to create or build our dynasty here and create economic regulation on the industry. But I do recognize, and obviously with the tragic events in the Gulf right now and what's going on there, I'm a little nervous about the impact of an overarching federal policy as it relates to this shale play. But having said that, you look at Equitable, Chesapeake, MarkWest, Apache, and Range. I mean, you've got unbelievable resources, and you've got a stellar track record when it comes to safety. So I'm going to throw it out to John and Martin. What do we do with those other actors that are stubbing their toe in the Marcellus Shale that's kind of creating a lot of problems for the four of us, soon to be five of us, and our DEP secretary? So thoughts there? Is it just, as I view it, the market will rid those actors out, but in the interim, I mean, we do have some of those situations here in the Commonwealth right now, and like to get your thoughts on it.
Well, from my position, I would point out that one of the things is I think we all get wrapped up, but I would point out that none of those incidents are gathering lines for what we're here for. They're, wells and other item issues down the road, so they have not been the gathering or the transmission lines. So the piping has not been the issue. And back to sort of when there is piping issues, it tends to be the digging, which I think we could put some more teeth there at the end of the day. On the other side, I think the DEP is taking an approach. I think you probably do need to penalize some of the bad actors at the end of the day. There does need to be a little oversight, but you can't put a system or process in place that then penalizes everybody for the few good actors. I mean, some of the guys at the end of the day, you shouldn't need a regulation to say, hey, I suck a stream dry so that fish are dead. That should be common sense, right? If you have somebody like that, I think there's current statutes and regulations that you can jump on them without more at the end of the day. So,
yeah, I'll just add to that, we in the industry have formed the Marcellus Shale Coalition, and I can tell you that we're all very sensitive when one of our members may have done something that the others would not have done. And I think it's great to have an organization like that, because obviously the coalition is trying to push the Marcellus forward, and accidents will send it back two steps for every step forward. It's something that we just can't have. And so I do think there's a lot of pressure. The regulation and the oversight of the DEP is extremely important in those incidents. And it is important to go to penalize those that have actually done the violation and not the industry as a whole.
Appreciate your comments. The other question I have, we get criticized by some that we're trying to build our dynasty here in terms of gas safety. And Paul Metro, who's with us, does an excellent job here at the Commission on gas safety. But I've said this past week is, in order for us, and I think I'm very encouraged by your support of us getting that authority that we need to monitor and enforce the requirements of 49 CFR 192, but we're not going to do it with six or eight gas inspectors. So we're going to need your help in educating the legislature on the need for us to get this designated authority so we can get our allocation of funds to really ramp up. We're going to need boots on the ground in order to accomplish that mission. So I'm more of a thank you for the consistent message that you've delivered to us as an industry to help us get over that. I think out of 41 jurisdictions, there's only two, Alaska and Pennsylvania, that don't have that oversight right now. So, I encourage you, if you could get that word out, and I know our legislative friends coming from you would give it added credibility. Morgan, I also want to thank you and, again, the leadership team at the Allegheny Conference, because I do think, I'm a southeastern Pennsylvania guy. If you walk down my street, nobody knows what the Marcellus Shale is right now. But the whole focus, you guys, the strategic plan that we talked about in really promoting that part of Pennsylvania as an energy center nationally now, internationally, I just want to commend you and your group for your leadership there. It means a lot to this Commonwealth going forward. I will wrap up with just, Lou, I just want you to know I did a hearing on May 11th in Williamsport, and I will tell you, I think I've converted some of those Oklahoma Sooner fans and Texas Longhorn fans to root for Penn State.
God bless you.
So with that, I'll turn it back to Chairman Cawley for our next set of questions.
Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions, and after this morning's public meeting, a comment was made to me about my being nice today. Was I ill or something? So I'll just do that by way of a disclosure. But no, first of all, I really do echo the comments earlier by the Vice Chairman and Commissioner Powelson. It is very refreshing to hear the, dare I say, unsolicited support of this commission's position around the authority that we're looking for as far as gathering lines are concerned. We have enough on our plate already with setting rates and rate designs and all of that kind of stuff. That is definitely not something that these sitting commissioners are seeking. But we do have, and I believe, a legitimate concern for the safety and well-being of the citizens of Pennsylvania. And I have been out looking at gathering lines. And dare I say, from my uninformed observation, from what I could see, it appeared that everybody was building their lines appropriately and properly. But I'm not an engineer, and so I can't say that it was actually done. But I did have concerns about lines that are going up in rural communities, that are going in rural communities, and would they be adequately mapped? Would they be constructed and in alignment with the local community, with the municipal authorities, so that when we do 811 calls, people will know where the lines are, and we will be subject less to unnecessary incidents of contractors digging where they shouldn't be digging. I do have a question for Mr. Mollenkopf, and it's an economic development question. You state in your testimony that you've invested over $450 million in Marsalis Hill. How much of that has been in Pennsylvania?
That's all in Pennsylvania.
Well said.
There's plenty more to come as well.
Thank you. I also note that your company, and I guess I did have a little bit of confusion because you say you're here American Gas Association, but most of your testimony is on behalf of MarkWest. So I'd just like to know if you could make a distinction between what's MarkWest and what's the American Gas Association.
Yes, I was asked by the AGA to give some perspective on gathering systems that serve the producers in AGA. So I got the call this Saturday to come out and do that, but we're so active in a lot of these shale developments that they thought it would be appropriate that I could give you some insight as to how the shale has developed in other states and the kind of regulatory environment that permits that development.
And then I'll move on. Mr. Fritz, and in a number of occasions in your testimony, you mentioned that there have been no significant incidents with gathering line, and I'd like for you to please define significant, because I know that significant to me might be a lot less to you.
I will read you the definition if you give me just a second. It roughly it equates to if anybody was fatally injured or hospitalized, or there were $50,000 or more in total costs of damages measured in 1984 dollars because of the way the regulation works, which would probably equate to about $30,000 worth of damage. So anything of basically $30,000 and up would be considered a significant incident.
That's significant to me as well. Thank you. And finally, Morgan, I just wanted to comment that the economic development hypothesis or theory or idea that you've just placed on the table, I heard you. I hear you loud and clear. It is something that I will take to heart and I will noodle on, and I can assure you that I will raise it again with my colleagues to see if we can kind of think it through and talk it through and see if there is some way. One needs to understand, however, that the PUC operates at the behest of the legislature. We try like hell not to get in ahead of policy because that tends to get people fired. but I do believe that this is that is an idea that is very worth consideration here at the PUC, and I assure you that I will bring it up again to my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. I have more reactions than questions. I should make it clear on behalf of all of us again, we're not trying to build an empire here, but you can legitimately worry that what we may believe may not be the beliefs of our successors. So you can be worried about that, and we understand that. But this group of commissioners is interested in safety because we know that's clearly within our jurisdiction. We have, for many years, our inspectors, our pipeline inspectors, have been inspecting public utility pipelines. We do not have jurisdiction over non-public utility pipelines, but we have asked the legislature for that authority because the federal government wants us to act as its agent. Nobody else, at least in the government, is inspecting those pipelines. And even though the track record in the last 20 years is excellent, we're talking mostly about lower pressure pipelines, and what's being built now for the Marcellus Shale are much higher pressure lines. And of course, the potential for a disaster is greater. So we have asked the legislature for precisely what we're doing now for public utility gathering lines to be applied to non-public utility gathering lines. There is the exemption under the federal CF 49 CFR Part 192 that there is diminished inspections of so-called Class 1 pipelines, defined Wyoming County Landowners Incorporated has in its testimony, and we'll hear from them later. A Class 1 is 10 or fewer dwellings units per mile within 220 yards of the pipeline. In other words, there's less inspection in lessly populated areas, which rationally makes sense, but may not be of great comfort to the people who are in rural areas. But for at least for starters, we have asked the legislature for additional jurisdiction, and we would do more, no more nor less than what we're already doing on behalf of the federal government, for which we are compensated. And they would compensate us to do inspections on their behalf. But I do note that your testimony that in states like Oklahoma, the legislature has seen fit to extend what the federal government is doing. And if I heard you correctly, Mr. Malenkoff, you said that the commission in Oklahoma at least has the right to gather information. I take it they don't have any authority to do more than gather the information. Do they have the right to enforce safety if they find dangerous conditions?
Yes, this is a recent request that they've had to gather information on the Class 1 pipes. And so I believe they're seeking the additional authority to do that.
Well, again, this is up to the legislature. But we feel an obligation to at least do as much as we're doing for public utility gathering lines. And unfortunately, you have to make rules for everybody. I know the Marcellus Shale Coalition, made up of responsible operators, supports what we're asking for. If for no other reason, they don't want the liability, they want to do a good job. But you've got to make rules to prevent the bad actors from hurting people. And therefore, at least for the time being, all we're asking for is what we do presently for public utility gathering lines. Now, as relates to our policy of a least cost procurement policy, which we impose on our gas distribution companies, I was glad to hear you say, Mr. Fritz, you'd rather sell your gas in Pennsylvania and not have to build a pipeline to get it to an interstate pipeline, but it's at least my impression that much of this gas is going to go to an interstate pipeline and it's going to go outside of Pennsylvania. I don't have the ability, nor does anyone have the ability to stop companies from doing that under the United States Constitution. The Commerce Clause would prevent us from insisting that all the, quote, cheap gas stay in Pennsylvania and only the and if there's anything left over, you can sell it outside of Pennsylvania. We can't do that. But I'd like to see a lot of that cheap gas stay in Pennsylvania because it'll help with our least cost procurement policy. Now, at the same time, we are very concerned about the viability of the so-called shallow gas industry. It's been a wonderful provider of natural gas at lower than interstate pipeline rates for our natural gas distribution companies for a lot of years. Can you tell me, or can anybody tell me, whether we're going to destroy the shallow gas industry in Pennsylvania with our Marcellus Shale play?
I can't honestly tell you that that may not happen. And I think one of the reasons that it probably will not happen is one that you just referred to, and that is the amount of Marcellus gas going into the interstate pipelines. Most of our distribution systems here in Pennsylvania are ill-equipped to take large volumes of gas right into the pipeline system. One of the ways that our industry has been successful over the years is the companies like, you know, Peoples Natural Gas, Columbia, Pennsylvania, T.W. Phillips, in areas where we have active wells in that area, we have gas entering throughout their system and that's spread out in various parts of the various pipeline systems. And they're equipped to handle that. If you start putting 3 and 4 million cubic feet a day into, you know, one location for an individual Marcellus well is one thing. But if you have a field of 10 or 15 wells that are producing 50, 60, 70 million cubic feet a day, frankly, that's going to have to go in an interstate pipeline. That's not something you're going to be able to put directly into the Peoples Natural Gas Company. So I think that's one of the things that's going to help keep the conventional side of the industry alive here in Pennsylvania.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. It doesn't make any sense.
I sure hope so anyway.
Well, I can understand why you'd feel that way. But I think I do, and I think we do. It doesn't make any sense to destroy hundreds of jobs in one industry and try to create them in another. On the eminent domain issue, let me just say this. We have heard reports of heavy-handed rights-of-way efforts. Individuals on behalf of their companies threatening either take the offer or we're going to invoke an eminent domain because we're not they either say they're a public utility or they say we're soon going to be a public utility. Well, I'll tell you, that doesn't go down well with us. And that shows to us a propensity to operate unlawfully. When we hear that kind of thing, we don't give people a certificate of public convenience. Now, at the same time, I have to remind anyone who's listening that the eminent domain provisions in Pennsylvania law are in the eminent domain code. There's nothing in the public utility code about it. But giving an entity a certificate of public convenience automatically qualifies them for eminent domain authority. I do understand, though, that I could be incorrect, and this will be coming up in a case that we have pending. We may retain jurisdiction on an individual basis, whether an entity can exercise an individual basis eminent domain. And if we decide at that point that it's in the public interest for the taking, then the matter is referred to a court of common pleas in a county for determination of the damages. But landowners, I don't think, want to hear all that. They don't want to have to go to the expense of hiring expert witnesses and litigating matters before the Public Utility Commission of whether taking is in the public interest or not. So I fully understand why landowners can be concerned when they're up against that kind of an economic threat. I won't say anything more about that for now. Now, Mr. O'Brien, I really am intrigued by your comments about economic development, because we've had discussions with the governor and his staff, we've had discussions with the legislature about ways to promote economic development. I at least have said it's too bad we don't have a Niagara Falls that provides us with cheap hydroelectric power, nor do we have the Columbia River in Washington State. But we do have Marcellus shale gas, and perhaps there could be a set aside for the revenues of some of that money to use for economic development. But here's the rub. How do you do that without undermining the hard work we have done to create a competitive marketplace for electricity supply in Pennsylvania? I mean, how do you not undermine what we've already done?
Right. It's got to be thoughtful and carefully. And I 100% agree with that. I mean, the idea of having a tool that other states don't have. We have this asset. It's not anywhere else, or it's maybe in a few states depending on Martin's map. But we've got an asset that others don't. And it's just an opportunity that, with a lot of good thinking, which I don't even pretend to have most of it, that economically you could create electricity with this gas, and it would be a tool for the state. I'm not the designer of markets. I could never understand how PJM worked and all those markets worked. But all I'm saying is that the fundamentals are here. There's a potential. That's my only testimony here, Jim, is that there's an opportunity here, and as a state, we're struggling. We're dying for jobs. We're dying to keep people in this state. We're dying to bring people back to the state. We have a whole bunch of people who are engaged in it, and it's an opportunity that we have that others don't. And my testimony is we should explore that and think about it.
Well, I understand, and I think it's an intriguing idea. And I don't mean to suggest that we should overlook it or ignore that kind of suggestion simply to keep certain big energy suppliers profitable. No, that's not the idea. It's just that if you get the government into the business of providing below-cost power, pretty soon everybody wants it, and private enterprise is undermined, and jobs leave, and
we're living in a country where the government's giving out millions of dollars to keep industry going and to create jobs. This is an opportunity to use something other than just handing money to folks. That's my only point.
Thank you. I have no further questions.